This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
Hour number two of the Blitz starts now, live AM 1340 FM 105.7. As always, you can go to fanrunradio.com, click the link at the top for the live stream. Hey, if you like apps, we got an app. Go ahead and download the Fan Run Radio app today and take us wherever you may go. And as always, you can head over to our Periscope feed at Facebook Live at Fox Sports Knox on Facebook. Watch us live. See our smiling faces as well on the Twitter app at Fox Sports Knox. But at this time, let's go ahead, Charlie. Let's get into some of the biggest headlines of the day and the week. And let's go to the opening drive.
First down.
Let's do it.
The Tampa Bay Rays are officially calling up shortstop Wander Franco.
Who that is?
MLB's number one prospect. An absolute stud. Switch hitting infielder. In 39 games for AAA Durham, he hit 315. 586 slugging, 7 home runs, 35 RBIs. And he really is the definition of a five-tool player. Contact, power, speed, fielding, plus arm. Very exciting. The Rays are in the midst of a 6-game losing streak. They were one of the hottest teams in baseball towards the top of their division. So, you know, typical Rays. Looking for a little spark. You know, they like to rely on young guys. And then, you know, once this guy gets good enough to get paid, they'll probably just trade him away. But right now, he's about to get called up for the Rays. The Rays only hit 222 in June, which is 25th in the majors. So, yeah, they do need some kind of spark, and he's more than ready to play.
Is that big for baseball? Is this a big name?
Yes, absolutely. He's a guy that has all the potential in the world to be one of the biggest stars in the game. Fun guy, young guy.
Like a Mike Trout level star?
I would never really call anyone Mike Trout level star and has the potential to be, just because Mike Trout could go down as one of the best players in baseball. But, I mean, yeah, Franco does have the potential to be the best player on most teams down the road. He could be one of those guys that, you know, gets a huge contract and is one of the young faces of baseball. And, you know, maybe it doesn't pan out too, because baseball has, you know, more busts than any other sport, it feels like. But, I mean, he's the number one prospect for a reason. He's shown that he's ready to get called up, and he's torn it up in the minors. So it's exciting. And by the way, speaking of baseball, don't look now, Chance, but my Nationals are hot.
Are they?
8-2 in the last 10, just won a series with the Mets. Kyle Schwarber, in his 14 games since hitting in the leadoff spot, has hit 9 home runs and has 18 RBIs.
That's certainly a spot where he excelled in with the Cubs, too, as well.
Yeah, he hit 3 home runs in that leadoff spot yesterday. And, weirdly enough, Gerardo Parra, you remember him, the Baby Shark guy?
Mm-hmm.
After a stint in Japan and then nowhere, we just called him up to our team yesterday for no real reason. So, he's back, and the Juju's back. Watch out for the Nationals. Second down, though. College football playoffs 12-team model has made it through the next stage of whatever it takes to get approved.
approval?
The next stage of approval. It'll now go before the top decision makers next week as the management committee agreed on Friday to present that concept to the 11 university presidents and chancellors who have the ultimate authority over the format at a meeting tomorrow, actually, in Dallas. The management committee is made up of 10 FBS commissioners and Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick. It'll ask the presidents and chancellors on the College Football Playoffs Board of Managers to authorize the solicitation of feedback and begin feasibility assessments of any new formats.
All right, so we got the ball rolling now.
More positive momentum. It's not just a fun thing that we talk about on Twitter anymore, but could realistically become a thing sooner rather than later.
It's not just something that we're going to be talking about, something that's just a topic of discussion, that it's actually getting moving, and, you know, it's higher ups, and they're trying to get this thing going. But at the same time, I hate when they approve something like this, and then we got to wait 2 years on it. Like, my opinion is, like, let's go ahead and set this thing up for this next season or the season after that. But I know it'll be a couple years before it would even go into play.
2023?
Yeah, 2023.
Does that mean... not next season, but the one after?
But the
because
one after.
It's technically, once you get to the College Football Playoffs, it is 2023.
Ooh.
Or does that mean it's the start of the season in 2023?
I would bet that it would be the start of the season in 2023, but you do have an excellent point there. We'll continue to watch that and see how it plays out. Hey, but let's stay on the collegiate athletics side. Big news for former players, in a dispute. They win with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court sides with former players in dispute with NCAA over compensation. In a ruling that could obviously help push changes in college athletics, the Supreme Court today unanimously sided with a group of former college athletes in a dispute with the NCAA over rules limiting certain compensation. The High Court ruled that NCAA limits on the education-related benefits that colleges can offer athletes who play Division I basketball and football can't be enforced. Under current NCAA rules, students cannot be paid, and the scholarship money colleges can offer is capped at the cost of attending school. The NCAA defended these rules for a long time to preserve the amateur nature of college sports, but the Supreme Court said no more. And Jeffrey Kessler, the plaintiff's attorney, told ESPN's Dan Murphy, "It's tremendous to win this 9-0. Hopefully, this will be the major next step on the road to a true, fair, competitive system for these athletes. It should have positive effects immediately on NIL, which is name, image, and likeness. We look forward to a world that's better for college athletes today than it was yesterday." The former athletes who brought the case included former West Virginia football player Shawnee Alston. They argued that the NCAA rules on education-related compensation were unfair and violate federal antitrust law designed to promote competition. Hey, and the Supreme Court agreed. The case doesn't decide whether students can be paid salaries. You need to be aware of that. It does not decide whether students can be paid salaries. Instead, the ruling will help determine whether schools decide to offer athletes tens of thousands of dollars in education-related benefits for things such as computers, graduate scholarships, tutoring, study abroad, and also internships. What do you think about this ruling that was the Supreme Court held today? What do you think about it, Charlie? I know you're against salaries. This is not about paying players. This is about adding more educational benefits for players.
Yeah, honestly.
And everybody's talking about, we give them free education. We give them tuition. Hey, well, now you're going to be able to, university's going to be able to buy computers for them.
Yeah, well, I think they can already do that.
They probably can in some way.
They already have crazy stipends. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. This sounds good, and I guess
they can use those stipends more for things that they need since they can't work, and then the university can offer them more in scholarship so they can go out and buy a nice Mac computer or, you know, go out and get that tutoring and do some study abroad.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good on paper. Will it be good? I guess we'll see.
For
it's a lot of big words. It's a lot of big words. It's a lot of fancy stuff. It's a lot of complicated wording and everything else. I don't know how much will really change, but it's positive momentum for those that are trying to work towards ultimately paying the players.
Definitely
it doesn't thrill me just as someone that wants to preserve the nature of college athletics.
Well, I feel like this would be more of the people who want to preserve it on that side. You're not going to pay them salaries. It's just, you know, offering them other education-related benefits that benefit them for their time as being a student athlete. So we'll continue to watch that. I think it's a good move. Definitely going to help out name, image, likeness moving forward, get that ball rolling even more. But hey, the Supreme Court said, NCAA, we're siding with the players. Fourth down, Charlie.
Fourth down. Don't know if you got a chance to watch it or not. I know that you were out of town and then, you know, out on the lake and stuff, obviously. But we had the U.S. Open finish up this weekend over at Torrey Pines. We got an absolutely fantastic Open this year. I mean, couldn't have asked for much more. I think you had 25 guys within a shot of the lead or leading going into the final Sunday.
That's a good story.
The lead changed quite often. And ultimately, whether it was destiny, karma, or none of the above, Jon Rahm, after testing positive for COVID just a couple weeks ago with a six-shot lead heading into Sunday and having to withdraw, he comes back, gets out of quarantine early. His parents are able to come watch him at Torrey Pines. And on Father's Day, he wins his first major after birdieing the final two holes to win by one. No one in the 120-year history of the U.S. Open has ever birdied the last two holes to win by one stroke. Just narrowly edged out Louis Oosthuizen. Oosthuizen was pretty great, but just didn't really have that clutch putt in him going down that, you know, the final stretch in the back nine, and Jon Rahm did seem to have it. It was pretty special. I mean, it was a pretty cool event. Torrey Pines is a special place to him. He proposed to his now wife there, won his first ever event there, and now here he is winning his first ever major there, winning the U.S. Open, despite really not getting that same prep time that everyone else got because of that, you know, COVID positive test. Just a real fairy tale kind of story to cap off what was a fantastic Open. It really, really, really delivered.
The promoter, we need more seats. We just sold out all the floor seats.
Welcome back to the Blitz. Great opening drive there. Finish that. Talking about Jon Rahm and his big victory. Hey, just the all-around performance for him. Returning back to number one PGA rankings. Getting to celebrate that Open championship with his 10-week-old son, Kepa, and his flying his dad from Spain. But now it's time to get to some association action. Over the weekend, we had some game sevens.
Where do we even start?
I know. I got to find my place.
I mean, I guess, do we just go back to Friday?
I think we have to. We have to go back to Friday. We have to break this thing down. You know, we talked about how the hockey playoffs have been pretty damn good. I think the NBA playoffs have as well. And for people who don't really care to watch them, hey, I think you're missing out a little bit. But you had on Friday night, It was the 76ers won a big one against the Hawks, tied that series up 3-3, pushing it to a game seven. You had the Clippers, and I called that before I went on vacation. The Clippers blowing out the Jazz, who were no match, led by.
They were down 25.
They were down 25 in that
game. I went to a concert Friday night.
Yeah, I saw you went to a concert.
And what?
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, one of the best concerts I've been to. Cody Johnson was awesome. But, yeah, no, so I go to a concert, and I'm not really looking at my phone. I'm missing these games. And, you know, it ends, and I'm like, oh, you know, if we hurry home, we can get home for the fourth quarter. And I went and checked the score. I was like, oh, the Jazz are up 20. We don't even need to worry about getting home. And then, you know, drive home, whatever else. Next thing I know, the Clippers have won. And I have no idea what happened, how it happened. How do they erase that deficit with no Kawhi Leonard?
No Kawhi Leonard. Donovan Mitchell, he scored 39. He did all he could do, 39, 9 assists, 9 rebounds. Rudy Gobert, turns out he wasn't as much of a defensive stopper as he needed to be later on in these last couple games. He turned out he was more of a liability. He only had 12 and 10. Royce O'Neal, 21 and 10. That was surprising. Bojan Bogdanovic, he had 14 and 4 for the Jazz. But when we look at the Clippers, as I had said, I had a hot take before I left on vacation. I said the Clippers would win four straight, and they did. And it was led by, not by Paul George, not by Kawhi Leonard, Not even by Reggie Jackson or Marcus Morris Sr., but it was Terrence Mann.
How? What happened to Terrence Mann? What did he drink or what did he eat or what did he watch on Friday?
That man was out of
for him to just be possessed by the ghost of Michael
Jordan. He was a possessed man, if you get it. He was 15 of 21 from the field, 71% from the field. He shot 7 of 10 from behind the arc, and he finished with 39 points to really just put a dagger in the Jazz in their hopes and dreams of getting to the Western Conference Finals. And the Clippers get to the Western Conference Finals for the first time in franchise history. They also got 16 from Nicholas Batum, 7 rebounds. Paul George was no slouch, though. He's been doing all he can. Playoff P has emerged in the last couple of games. 28, 7 assists, 9 rebounds. Reggie Jackson had 27. Pat Beverly finally showed up. He had 12. He was 3 of 4 behind 3. But it was the game of Terrence Mann that iced it for the Clippers and put away the Jazz.
Where did that come from?
Who knows? Who knows? And there we go to say it, as our friend Brandon would say, you can never trust the Jazz. 15 lead changes in this game, 5 ties, and just the bench points. The Jazz tried. They had a pretty good outpouring from their bench, 28-14, but it was just too much from Terrence Mann, Reggie Jackson, and Paul George. The new big three.
It's tough, man. It's tough for the Jazz.
It is.
Such an unfortunate break for them. Donovan Mitchell really was probably too hurt to even be playing, and he was still putting up more than 30 a night.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you were without Mike Conley, too. I mean, the Jazz were probably the best team in the NBA this year. And
yeah. Injuries got them late.
They got them late. That and Rudy Gobert, fraudulent.
Turns out he was just a
big old fraud. You know, he's...
Defensive of the Player of the Year did not show up.
Not my Defensive Player of the Year, that's for sure. Whew. I mean, he can block 7 shots against the Pistons on a Tuesday night in February, but, you know, put him in the pick and roll against someone good and he backs off too much, you can just hit that little floater all day.
Kept
all
him on skates the entire game. Just a little comparison in that Game 7, the Clippers, 81 points in the second half to the Jazz's 47. Clippers really went off in that third quarter and that fourth quarter to ice this game, and they move on to the Western Conference Finals.
How often do you see the Defensive Player of the Year intentionally being targeted in an elimination game in the playoffs?
It would never happen to Jordan. Never happened to Jordan.
God, they need to move on from Rudy Gobert. And I mean, they've built.
They need to blow it up already.
They've built their team, you know, to an extent about. They built their team, you know, around his strengths to an extent, but at the end of the day, it's his weaknesses that are their downfall. They've put too many eggs in the Rudy Gobert basket, and then he's been exposed. Again, you can either go small ball and he can't leave the paint, and then you can just rain down threes or just get him out of the paint and then attack him downhill, or you can put him in the pick and roll. He backs off too much and then just hit that little floater, mid-range floater all day.
Yeah, the pick and roll really put Gobert in the spin cycle. Then also on Friday night, like I said, the 76ers tied up that series before their Game 7. Tobias Harris, Vol for Life, 24-5. Joel Embiid, 22-13. Seth Curry, he went off again, 24. And then it was Tyrese Maxey with a nice outpouring of 16 points to lead, to help the 76ers onto a victory. Trae Young had 34 in that one, 34 and 12 assists. Capella, 14. He had double-double, 11 rebounds. Kevin Huerter, we'll have more to talk about him in just a second. 17 and 11 in that Game 6. And Danilo Gallinari, he's found the fountain of youth. He had 16 in that one. Then we move on to Saturday. We had 2 Game 7s. This was a really good weekend for the association. Another Game 7 that did not disappoint, the Bucks and the Nets. And the Bucks edged the Nets out just by 4 after a toe on a line could have sent the Bucks packing, but it only tied the game at the end of regulation for Kevin Durant and the Nets. And the Bucks outlast them in overtime behind Giannis, 40-13. And I still don't know how that happened. As much as I'd like to, and I give a lot of credit to the Bucks. They have a good team. Giannis, I mean, We know he just gets to the paint whenever he wants to. Chris Middleton had some great games in this series. He finished with 23 on Saturday night. Brooke Lopez gave them a nice output, hitting three threes, 19 points. P.J. Tucker, he came to play. I'd been wondering where he was at. He's a corner three specialist. He hit three of those, 11 points for him. KD did all he could, man. He did all he could this series. He showed us why he's the best player in the league right now, best player in the world. He had 48, 6, and 9, but he was playing with a one-legged James Harden, who played 53 minutes along with Kevin Durant. That is the entirety of the game and the overtime. And a lot of people were really talking to Steve Nash why he didn't go more later on in the game with maybe a Jeff Green instead of a Joe Harris, who struggled. Joe Harris had a good first round. Joe Harris did not have any good games. Maybe not even a good first round. He had a good first game, and then he was MIA on the milk carton the rest of the series, the rest of the two series for the Nets. What'd you think about this from Charlie? KD did all he could, man.
I mean, it really did just kind of turn into Kevin Durant versus the Bucks.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Let's stand James Harden over here so they have to respect him. Let's get Bruce Brown to set a pick, and we'll just see who guards KD and let him do his thing. And he really did all he could. And again, like you said, if he was wearing two sizes smaller of a shoe, he'd hit that game-winning three.
And that's a game winner.
And here they are in the Eastern Conference Finals. But instead, they go to overtime. Bruce Brown gets that first bucket, and then really, Kevin Durant was just gassed. And you thought, you know, he did get you there, but you thought maybe he should have distributed a little bit more in overtime, given that he didn't have anything left in the tank. It ends with a Kevin Durant air ball. And the look on his face, it didn't really feel like one of anger. It didn't even really look like he was that disappointed. It just looked like, man,
I gave it all I had.
I did everything I could, and I guess it just wasn't meant to be right now. And
I agree with you. I think that look was just like, hey, man, I did all I could. He poured in 48.
It was just a look, respect for the game.
He had 49 in the previous game. James Harden did have 22, but he was 2 of 12 from 3, and he was playing on a grade 2 hamstring pull or tear. And likely he shouldn't have been out there. I don't know what they were doing with their rotation, why they didn't maybe go with Jeff Green. We've seen Jeff Green play the point guard a lot, and he's come up in clutch over the years. Maybe they could have put him out there some. Maybe even rotated with him with Joe Harris. I mean, Blake Griffin, he even had a nice welcome back to the NBA over this last series with Kyrie out. But Kevin Durant couldn't do it by himself, playing with a bum James Harden, no Kyrie Irving, no real support outside of Blake Griffin. It was tough. And like you say, he just looked overall just gassed at the end of this game, and the Bucks were just able to – they were able to withstand the runs and able to just be the last one standing and kind of, you know, wear him down. But I think that goes to show, like, think about the conditioning for Kevin Durant. Guy who comes off of, what was it, an Achilles tear?
Yeah.
Didn't play last season in the bubble. Decides he comes back this season, having a pretty damn good year. He also gets hurt some during the season, sits down. But his conditioning to be able to play, I want to say he played the last two games, maybe every minute of each of their game six and game seven.
If it wasn't
seven.
Every minute, it was nearly every minute.
Yeah, if it wasn't the entirety of both games, it was very close. And he did put the team on his back, and he did all that he could. I don't know if there's more blame. Is there more blame to Steve Nash, the way he did his rotation, or they just didn't have enough?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Steve Nash, maybe he could have done a couple things different, but at the end of the day, they really didn't have enough once those two guys went down to be able to beat the Bucks. The Bucks, you know, they kind of have discovered their identity a little bit more this playoff. They've realized that Chris Middleton can be that guy. He can be your primary option, your primary scorer if needed be. And Drew Holiday has filled his role nicely.
The defense that he played.
Drew Holiday is really found his niche. He's really found what he does well and how he fits into that team well. And he's been good this year, but he's really playing well in the playoffs.
But we've known that he's been a good defender, but he's the one who's defending Durant late on that air ball to end overtime that pretty much sealed the deal for the Bucks. So, hey, great game sevens. been great so far. Hey, we'll go ahead and take a quick timeout, Charlie, because I want to take the next segment to talk about these next two games in their entirety. Let's talk about this Game 7 win for the Atlanta Hawks. I'll go ahead and give Cam and John Reed their flowers today. Atlanta Hawks pull one out. We'll go ahead and break it down on the other side and Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals leading into the Eastern Conference Finals and the Game 2 tomorrow for the Suns and the Clippers. This is the Blitz, and this is Fan Run Radio. Welcome back to the Blitz. A couple more segments before the Talk Sports boys get up in the building. Another riding that high today because the Hawks. Shout out to Cam Black, John Reed. Go ahead and give you your flowers early on. Hawks take a marvelous Game 7 last night in stunning fashion. And we got the Kevin Huerter game. Anybody have that on their bingo board?
Go Terps, baby.
Go Terps. Kevin Huerter.
I love when Kevin Huerter does good because he's just the most puzzling player in the NBA. When
did he get a post game?
How's a scrawny 6'7 ginger dude from Maryland and a solid NBA starter? How did that happen?
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know about you. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I didn't know much about him coming out of college. Just one day he popped up and he was a starter for the Hawks. That's how it felt like to me.
He was a first rounder, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I think so. But I think all of a sudden, you know, like he's got an all-around game now. Like, we've known he's been a three-point specialist. He can shoot the three ball. But last night it was a little bit of that, and it was he got some rebounds. He was posting Steph Curry up, and they didn't have an answer for it at all. But it was all-around team effort for the Hawks, and they take Game 7 against the number one seeded out of the Eastern Conference, Philadelphia 76ers, and Doc Rivers loses another Game 7, which makes that 9. That's right, 9 Game 7s, and he took all the heat last night, all the smoke from Josh Smith. He let him have it. He had a ball with that. He went back to the game whenever he took out the Clippers with a barrage of threes in 2016, I believe, when he was a Rocket. The Clippers were up, I think, 3-1 in that series, and then the Rockets came back and won that against Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and them boys. But, yeah, the Hawks, they have done it. They're making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and that comes with their superstar, their best player, going 5 of 23. So Ben Simmons did put a little bit of lockdown on Trae Young, and they shifted their defensive focus accordingly after that first game when Trae just lit them up, and every game after that. But it was the support from Danilo Gallinari, who had 17. Also Clint Capella with 13 and 6. John Collins had 14 and 16. And then Kevin Huerter, like I said, leading scorer, 27 points, and he was ice cold. He was more of ice cold Trae than Trae Young was, but they get it done, team effort. And John Collins in the post game with wearing an Embiid shirt where he dunked on Embiid was just savage mode. Tobias Harris tried to keep the 76ers in it late. He had 24 and 14. Joel Embiid, I don't know about him. I guess he did all he could this series, 31-11, but at times it looked like he had given up.
He was playing with like a tear in his meniscus, right?
Yeah, a lot of these guys playing hurt, and that's kind of what LeBron alluded to about the quick startup from the bubble. I know people don't like to hear that from LeBron, but a lot of these players did get injured in these series. You look at Kawhi, you look at Joel Embiid, you look at Donovan Mitchell playing hurt, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. The wear and tear on their body was very significant for most of these players. And we generally get to the end of the season, and a lot of these guys are playing banged up. But I don't think we've seen the magnitude of injuries that we have in this year. Steph Curry had 16. He tried his best to keep his guys in it. Moral of the story was, though, Ben Simmons. Looks like the Sixers got a Ben Simmons problem on their hand. He only finished with 5 points. Once again, not really adding in the scoring department. 8 rebounds, 13 assists. But the big talk was that Ben Simmons does not like to shoot in the fourth quarter. Simmons.
In the last four games.
Last four games did not attempt a shot.
There were more water bottles thrown on the courts by fans than Ben Simmons
we
shots.
We attempted as many shots as Ben Simmons did in his last four games of the Eastern Conference semis.
I mean, it's
myself and you.
It's unbelievable. We were talking about this before the show. I mean, even at one point,
he passed up a dunk.
Yeah, he spins off of Gallinari and has a chance to
I
bang
was
one
that.
Home. and potentially could have even gotten fouled. Instead, he dishes it off to Matisse Thybulle.
I think that he was scared. Ben Simmons is not made for the moment.
He doesn't have the confidence, and he lacked that confidence even at LSU. And I remember at LSU, he wouldn't show up in the big games and in the big moments, and we just say, but look at how good he plays defense, and look at how he can finish in the paint, and,
well, Ben Simmons,
and all these things that he possesses, and he'll put it together, and he never does. He never does. It's time to move on from Ben Simmons, and the trust the process is over. The process failed you, Philadelphia.
I don't know.
And you built your team around the shortcomings of Ben Simmons a lot, too.
Well, it's very tough to say it failed them, because this is a team that was, you know, last in the Eastern Conference for many, many years and slowly got their way back into the playoffs and number one seed this year. And they've been a presence in the Eastern Conference playoffs, but I think the process of waiting on Ben Simmons is likely over. He can't do anything in the big moment. He's very scared. The fact that he struggles so bad. I mean, he is awful as a shooter. His confidence is shot. He has no more confidence anymore. Like you say, he's passing up open dunks because he's scared to get fouled because he can't shoot free throws. So he's just a liability out there outside of his defense that he does play, and we'll give him some credit there. And he's a decent passer, but he's not a point guard. If they do move on with Simmons for the next couple years, and they owe him a lot of money. I think it's over $140,000 they owe him over the next 4 years or so. If they do move on from him or keep him, it's like they have to move him to, like, the four spot. Like, he's, like, just a point four now. Like, he's not going to be your point guard. He can't score. They'd have to go out and get some type of scoring point guard that can give them something or try to trade him to somebody.
I mean,
Ben Simmons is one of the biggest players in the NBA who has reaped all the benefits off of potential. Like you said, everybody's talked about
it. He's never done anything.
His potential, his measurables, and he hasn't lived up to the expectations, and he continues not to. We'll see the offseason videos of where he's netting threes and shooting, but that's with nobody on him. That's with no fans in the crowd. That's with no pressure. Yeah, of course, he's doing it in the open gym, sure. I'm sure you can go down to your local YMCA, and he can light him up for 50. And half of that will be jumpers, but when it comes down to nut-cutting time, Ben Simmons can't get it done. Neither has Doc Rivers in the last X amount of years.
With a minimum of 70 attempts, Ben Simmons' 34.2% free throw shooting percentage is
it's laughable.
The worst in NBA postseason history.
Well, it's laughable.
The worst ever. Ever.
It's awful.
I got a question for you.
No.
You mentioned Doc Rivers and his shortcomings.
I mean, they blew a 26-point lead. They blew an 18-point lead this
shortcomings.
Series.
Who's been able to milk the one championship that they won into making people think that they're actually great more? Doc Rivers or Paul Pierce?
Paul Pierce has some really strong years. I hate to talk about truth like that. Like some strong years with the Celtics, and they just didn't have anybody, like
right.
any supporting cast.
No, I mean, I actually really like Paul Pierce. I respect Paul Pierce a lot.
I would say, I mean, you'd have to probably give it to Doc Rivers. I mean, the leads that they blew this series, 26-point lead that we'll continue to talk about, the 18-point lead, the series that he blew constantly with the Clippers up 3-1, yeah, it's Doc Rivers, because at the end of the day, yes, your players have to go out and compete, but also, I mean, like Josh Smith was roasting him today, there kind of has to be some adjustments made. There definitely has, and I'll say I was one that thought that, yeah, they made some adjustments after that first game when they played Trae Young. He came out, iced him up. Seems like they made some adjustments on Trae Young, but I guess when it comes to game sevens, they're still – Doc Rivers still doing the same thing. Watching somebody like Kevin Huerter scorch you and not changing your rotation on him or changing the matchup on him, not until late. And a big foul by Matisse Thybulle. I think that's
Thybulle.
How you said Thybulle.
Yeah.
That hurt him late, too. The turnovers by Joel Embiid, we'll have to talk about that. I mean, Embiid was a runner-up for the MVP. He made a lot of turnovers in this playoff. But shout out to the Hawks, man. Nobody thought they could do it. They fired Lloyd Pierce. They got Nate McMillan in the paint. And he has done his due diligence and used his stars and the supporting cast to get this team who nobody would have thought outside of Hawks fans, I'll say Hawks fans could have told you, oh, yeah, we're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, but nobody was thinking that they had a legitimate chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals.
You know, I look at the Hawks and I've never been a huge Trae Young guy. I expected him to be a bust. You know, I didn't think he made his teammates better.
I never expected me a bust.
And this year,
I feel like I might like the Hawks more if Cam and John didn't like them. And that's, you know, like when you got your friends like.
Well, just John, really. Cam is a good Hawks fan. Cam is the kind of guy that you feel happy for. But John, I don't know.
It's both of them. But it's like when you want your friends' teams to lose because your team's lost. Like, it's just one of those. It's natural. People do that all the time. If I can't have it, you can't have it.
Like, before the season, you know, I looked at this Hawks team and I was like, yeah, you know, I think they'll finish between 6 and 9. And
they wind up being the 4 seed.
And they end up being the 4 seed. And then I look at them, well, you know, I think they'll probably lose in the first round of the playoffs.
To the Knicks. Knicks are riding that high horse.
And then they get past the Knicks. I was like, well, now they actually have to, you know, play.
Come out, win game one. Like, lose the next
play
two.
Play the 76ers here. And they just keep proving people wrong. And then you look at them and you could be like, well, they get to play in the East. They had a really good record against the West.
They did.
You know, at some point, I guess it's time to quit finding excuses. And
we'll give them their flowers
now. This
applies
to me. Especially, like,
so
it's
we
time
do
to
it like
finding excuses.
Should it be like reverse psychology? Now we jump on the Hawks bandwagon. We're all for the Hawks. Me and you. All for the Hawks. We want the Hawks to win.
We're all Hawks.
I want the Hawks to
Hawk
win.
Hawk up, baby.
I want the Hawks to go to the finals. I want to see them win it all. I'd like to see the Hawks win it all.
Hawks, fly.
Hey, and if you've been watching the NBA playoffs from the sidelines, now it's time to tell you about our friends at FanDuel. Perfect time to get in on the action with FanDuel Sportsbook. Because during the conference finals, new users get 30-1 odds on any team to win their next game. That's right, 30-1 odds on any team to win their next game. That means you can win $150 on a $5 bet. Yes, $150 on a $5 bet. The conference finals that we're going to be looking at, obviously now we're Hawks fans. We're riding that wave. Fila, forever I love Atlanta.
Biggest Hawks fans at the station.
And then also, I mean, you look out west, the Clippers and the Suns. That should be a good one as well. Clippers in their first ever Western Conference Finals. We'll see if Chris Paul can find his way back to the hardwood, but Devin Booker putting up 40 points is going to be tough for anybody. And guess what? There are even more ways to win on FanDuel throughout the playoffs. And when you do win, getting your money is a layup. That's right, it's a layup. You'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. Plus, their app is so easy to use, people. You just need to sign up with promo code BLITZ to bet the NBA Conference Finals with 30-1 odds. Again, that's promo code BLITZ to unlock 30-1 odds on any playoff team to win their next game. Exclusively only on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. You must be 21 or older and present in the state of Tennessee. New users only. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required. $150 max bonus. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Problems with gambling? Call Tennessee Redline at 1-800-889-9789. Hey, Talk Sports boys are in the vestibule. They're ready to come up next. Charlie, let's go ahead and take a quick break. Come back with a little If You Haven't Heard.
I was raced off of Route Three, out past where the blacktop ends. We'd walk to church on Sunday morning, race barefoot back to
Johnson's. Welcome back to the Blitz, final segment Monday. Great show. If you missed anything, go back and listen to the podcast. Be it SoundCloud, also wherever you may download your podcast. Hour number one is already posted. Hour number two will be up very shortly after we get off the air. Talked a little Tennessee baseball and Virginia coming up short in Omaha yesterday. Also got into a little opening drive and NBA playoff action. But now it's time, as we always do at the end of the show, to get into a little bit of If You Haven't Heard. I'll go ahead and start off first. Charlie, you know, it's the summertime. A lot of people are traveling.
They are.
Well, you tend to do in the summertime.
Absolutely.
And also, after coming off a pandemic, people are back out and they are vacationing and seeing the world and seeing the nation. Well, American Airlines this weekend, thank God I was not on American Airlines, or actually, maybe it would have been a little bit more fun if I had been, because I would have had an excuse to not be back at work. But American Airlines was forced to cancel hundreds of flights this weekend due to significant staff shortages and maintenance issues. And the airline says it will continue to cancel 50 to 80 flights a day well into July. American Airlines, most of you, if you were watching the story or paying attention to this over the pandemic, furloughed and fired much of its workforce to give raises to top-level managers. And now they have a labor shortage as travel demands begin to pick up in the most demanding time, the summertime. So if you had an American Airlines flight over the weekend, sorry if you were grounded. Or maybe I'm not sorry because you got to spend an extra day on vacation. So that's my if you haven't heard today. American Airlines, do not book with them soon. You probably will have a flight cancellation once again. They don't have enough staff, man.
Everybody, man. People aren't working.
that's very true. Yesterday, when I got back from the lake, I went to one of my favorite Mexican restaurants around town, and they were literally closed early for the day because of staff shortage. Nobody is working right now, so that is a problem that we have right now. So, you got it if you haven't heard?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
If you haven't heard... Relish.
I was like, let's get to it.
Relish, finally, they pull off the victory. Now, if this doesn't make sense to you, I understand. The Baltimore Orioles, they do an animated hot dog topping race on the scoreboard every home game.
Okay.
And there's been an Orioles fan that wears a custom-made Relish shirt, Relish Baltimore Orioles shirt, to every game and gets really, really, really into rooting for Relish. And Relish hasn't won all season, and he's gone viral for getting increasingly upset that Relish hasn't won. Finally, Relish yesterday pulled off the condiment race upset, and he went bananas. He got two entire buckets of Relish dumped on top of him in celebration. But finally, remember where you were. June 20th, 2021, when Relish pulled off the victory.
And what did – this is the first time that Relish pulled off the victory?
Yes, and that guy has been at every Orioles game, the team that is already more than 20 games back in their division, and he still sits through every Orioles home game wearing the same Orioles Relish shirt to every home game, just waiting
for
Relish to finally win the animated condiment race. And finally,
that is some dedication.
Finally, he's got it.
That is some sheer dedication, and we should applaud that man. We should applaud that man. I cannot say enough more about that.
He deserves a banner.
That's pretty good. He definitely deserves a banner. Okay, before we get out of here, let's go ahead and get to some national calendar days on Monday, June 21st, 2021. First one up, National Selfie Day. You like taking selfies?
No.
I like a good selfie.
I mean, maybe you got to get the angle right. You got to get the upward down.
I'm not good at that. You know who is very good at angles? Women. And that, like, anytime I try to take a selfie.
Oh, you are a big selfie guy.
I'm never the one who's taking them. It's always a woman taking them for me because
I don't know. When you were on vacation, you were getting like 3 to 5 selfies a day up on the story, and they looked like they were taken by you.
But they were not because I am always the one that's like, no, give it to me because you can't take it right.
She wasn't doing a very good job either.
Yeah, you don't know how to do the angles. You don't know how many times I heard that on vacation. Also, it's Go Skateboarding Day. Did you ever skateboard?
No.
I did. I liked it. I had a little face. National Daylight Appreciation Day. We appreciate the daylight here. Thank God it's not Alaska. National Peaches and Cream Day. Great song by 112. National Day of the Gong. And today's state.
Whoa. Oh, no. I don't know who to guess anymore. I've been guessing New Mexico for 5 months. Hawaii.
National Arizona Day. Hey.
Oh, I should have known. Each other.
Thank you for listening. For Charlie, I'm Chance. We'll catch you tomorrow. Talk Sports is up next. Keep it tuned to Fan Run Radio all day.